Three Foxes and Two Kennies. Today's cell phone tale from Al Profit is about some interesting Detroit drug bosses from the 70s, 60s, oh shit, one of them from the 50s up through 70s, 80s. So first we got the Three Foxes. So recently a guy nicknamed the Black Fox, Walter Kasson, got out of federal prison. And interestingly, I've come to the point in these stories where, especially the Detroit ones, I have a lot of tangential connections. So I remember being at my friend's house, and his father has some letters from federal prison sitting out or something, and we were just glanced at them, and it was from Walter Kasson. And then my friend was telling me the story about Walter Kasson, when he caught the most recent case, which was for bringing heroin into the country, that when he got to court, his girlfriend turned out to be an FBI agent, and he knocked her out in the courtroom. That's what he told me. So Walter Kasson is from the same area as Southwest T and Big Meech, Southwest Detroit, Ecorse, River Rouge area. According to Scott Bernstein's research and Gangster Report, from the 60s into the 70s, he ran numbers and drug activity down there, and he caught a case in 78 when his own nephew, or a guy that was like a nephew to him, turned state's evidence. And he got out in 89, and he got back rocking, and he went back in, I think, the early 2000s, and he just got back out again. And then there is the Silver Fox. Now, the Silver Fox is somebody who's quite old, and I only know of him from a story Courtney Brown Jr. recently told me of being at dinner with his father and some other old-time, big-time guys from Detroit. And so Courtney's father is pushing probably 80 at this point, and the Silver Fox is older than him, and he worked with Henry Marzette. And Marzette, if you haven't seen anything I did on Marzette, I have a few stories about Henry Marzette on my page. Henry Marzette was a Detroit police officer in the 1950s. He was the most highly decorated black cop in Detroit police. And then about 58 or so, he went to the dark side, as they say. He started selling heroin himself. He went to prison for a couple years. He got with the Italians, and he became the big guy in Detroit all through the 60s. And then in the late 60s, as the Vietnam War heated up and the availability of China White increased, you had soldiers bringing it back. You also, because there were so many Westerners in Thailand, you know, you could get on a plane in Detroit, be a black guy, get on a plane in Detroit, go to Thailand and buy some heroin and smuggle it back over. So the Italian stranglehold on the supply was a lot less. So you had more people moving in, and there was a big drug war and et cetera. But the Silver Fox worked with Henry Marzette back in the early days, and I'm not sure what his times in and out of prison were, but he's still alive, and he must be more closer to 90 at this point. But he did tell Courtney Brown Jr. and Sr., or he mentioned at the dinner something that Courtney Brown Jr. told me that was really interesting. So, of course, one of the sub-themes of some of the, of when we're talking about these black gangsters from back in the early days, the 50s, 60s, is, you know, they were at the leading edge of black economic power in the country. I mean, this is before, you know, blacks were allowed to rise to much of a position in corporations. Sports didn't pay much. Entertainment business didn't pay much. There really weren't many, or really almost no routes to make a whole lot of money if you were black in the 50s and 60s. And he told them that Henry Marzette, just like the mafia, lost property and land in Cuba in 1959/60 when Castro took over from Batista. So I found that to be pretty interesting. It shows what kind of level that Marzette was moving on, as you know, as early as the late 1950s. But of course, by the late 50s, I mean, he had been in the game who knows, 4, 5, 6 years as a crooked cop. And, you know, you could really rack up a lot of money, especially at a time when, you know, there were heroin addicts, but there weren't the big networks of just lots of heroin coming in from all over the place. So if you were one of the few people in town that had a pipeline, whether it was with the Detroit Italians, or I think Marzette got caught up in a case out of New York, that was sending supplies to Detroit, you know, you could make a lot of money. And he apparently bought some land down in Cuba, which I found to be quite interesting. And Henry Marzette is one of the more fascinating guys I've studied. I urge you to look at my Henry Marzette piece. I'll put the link in the description. And if I ever get a chance to make a big budget Detroit historical crime episodic for Netflix or HBO, which hopefully I'll get a chance to do, I'd definitely like to make him one of the characters. And then the Red Fox, I told you there's three foxes. The Red Fox is someone I just heard a few stories about, but I did see him referenced in some newspaper articles about these other guys I'm going to talk about. So he did exist, and I'm pretty sure this story is true. A guy told me that the Red Fox, the guy I know, his father was a session player, let's say, for Motown, and dabbled in some things, and he saw the Red Fox in the late 70s with the bag with the beheaded head in it. And I don't know what became of the Red Fox, but so those are the three foxes: the Silver Fox, the Black Fox, and the Red Fox. Three guys prowling the streets of Detroit in the 1970s. Walter Kasson just came home, so glad you're home. Stay out of trouble. I'm sure you will. And the Silver Fox, whose name escapes me, he's pushing 90 and he's around. And the two Kennys in our story. Now, when I did Detroit Mob Confidential with Scott Bernstein, we had he wasn't an intern. He was a guy who contacted us, who said he had done all this research and he wanted us to be able to use it. And he had this huge binder full of hundreds and hundreds of newspaper clippings about crime and murder and gangster stuff in Detroit over the years. And here's the thing. So you can go into newspaper archives and find whatever you want, obviously, but you got to know what you're looking for, right? So the famous people and events I can go and find, or events I happen to know about through my personal knowledge, but you don't know what you don't know, to quote Donald Rumsfeld. So it was really interesting just flipping through this guy's binder, and it just was all these things you would have never even thought to look for that we discovered. And one, man, we got to get back in touch with this guy and get his binder. It was about, and I asked a cop, I think I asked a cop about these guys, and he said, yeah, I remember that, and he kind of validated the stories out of the newspaper, that there were two Kennys, two guys named Kenny, and they had the same last name. I don't think it was Wilson, but we'll just call him Kenny Wilson. But they were known as Black Kenny and White Kenny. They did not work together, but since they both had the same exact names, the police in the streets just referred to one as White Kenny and one as Black Kenny. And Black Kenny, I think, worked on the east side or something, but White Kenny worked in what was called the Cass Corridor. And that was one of America's white slum areas. And it's kind of been redeveloped. It's called what they call Midtown in Detroit now. The Cass Corridor was nasty. I went to Cass Tech High School, which is in the Cass Corridor. That was the magnet school for the city. I had to take a test. But it was that's one of the nastiest neighborhoods. Like Cass Corridor in the 80s up through the mid 90s was, just women everywhere, $5 heroin prostitutes, crack prostitutes. I remember there was a raid. They raided some house where like this couple, they would like sort of had these prostitutes working for them. And they would give them like one sandwich a day and, you know, X number of rocks and a lot of like weird, you know, it was like, combination of like ghetto and white trash and skid row, a homeless, just it's all there. I'll tell you how bad Cash Corridor was. I went to the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. But my test scores were good, but my grades weren't good. So I had to go to Wayne State for a year in between high school and Michigan. And Wayne State is in the Cash Corridor. And it was so unsafe in the Cash Corridor. I remember being a student, and it was like, this is probably 1994 or something. A man was raping men at gunpoint in the bathrooms of like the graduate library. Like it happened multiple times. They had signs up to like be careful. Homeless would just come into the classroom and steal shit, and like I'm saying, like while class was in session, and like dare you to do something about it. Because I mean, the homeless roaming around there were like often like, you know, guys who just did 15 years or something and got out, and they're just walking around stealing shit. Nobody would stop them. And so the Cash Corridor was White Kenny's area, and that was a, and before it became like a skid row area, it was just like a poor white hillbilly Appalachian area. It's near downtown, a lot of apartment buildings, dense population, a lot of bars, a lot of unattended children. Tangentially, there's a famous case, unsolved case in Michigan called the Oakland County Child Killer, where there, in the late 70s, there were multiple children abducted, et cetera, and left dead out in Oakland County, which is still a very affluent area. At one time, it was like the third richest county in the United States. It's where all the auto industry elite lived at. And there's been various suspects, like the child of an auto industry exec who was being treated by a psychiatrist, maybe, and admitted to some child MOLES, but he killed himself. And Bernstein is looking into some other things about some police that may have been involved that are still alive. But in most of the investigations of child of Oakland County child killer case, the roads lead back to the Cash Corridor of the involvement of some child MOLESTR ring of guys. And so they had access to all these, you know, unattended kids whose mother were prostitutes, drug addicts, or just in the bars of the Cash Corridor neighborhood. And this was White Kenny's stomping grounds. Now, White Kenny was kind of a proto-white boy Rick. Now, not because he was a white drug dealer in Detroit, of which there's been plenty and there's some now, but because he specifically was connected somehow to the Coleman Young family, just like white boy Rick married Coleman Young's niece. There was, I'm doing this from memory because this newspaper article is so obscure and I can't remember the two Kenny's last names. But I'm pretty sure this is it. Young Barbecue, which is now Uptown Barbecue on Livernois around between Puritan and Finkel, still open, but it used to be called the Young Family Barbecue. And there was some heroin sales undercover bought there around the time Coleman Young was made mayor. And there was talk that he was involved in the heroin trade and etc. And apparently they had like a, was it the fashion show? Was it at the Young Family Barbecue? Somehow there was some fashion show that Willie Volson, who was said to be this guy really pulling the strings behind Coleman Young, the criminal, and Willie Volson's daughter was Kathy Volson Curry, the one who went on to marry Johnny Curry and White Boy Rick, or be girlfriend of White Boy Rick. This White Kenny was somehow met the Volson and the Youngs. He was like a male model or something at this, something to do with the someone in the Young family having a fashion show. So it was intimated that he had some police protection from Willie Volson, who was the same person that would have been protecting White Boy Rick to some degree later on, which is kind of odd. I mean, maybe they, I don't know. What is it? I mean, did they think that they could groom these young white guys would be immune from getting arrested? Probably just an odd coincidence. That's probably all it is. And so White Kenny was a big deal, and I think he was tied in with the Red Fox guy, because the Red Fox guy worked in that area too. But again, I can't quite remember. Hopefully I can get these articles, because it's really interesting. And White Kenny got indicted and went to Leavenworth, and his brother was there too. But the case White Kenny got wasn't that bad. It maybe was just a drug case or something. But of course, there were some murders that could have came down. And White Kenny's brother, I think he went into the infirmary at Leavenworth for, you know, some sickness or get his tooth pulled or something, and they gave him the wrong medication and he died. And from reading the articles, it seemed like White Kenny might have had his brother done in at Leavenworth Penitentiary. So that was the tales, as best I can remember them, of the three foxes and the two Kennys. And hopefully I can get some more concrete information. Maybe we can get the Silver Fox or the Black Fox on for an interview next time I'm in Detroit. So go to gangsterreport.com, read some of Scott Bernstein's work on these guys, and go click the link below for Henry Marzette stories. All right, Al Profit, this has been a cell phone story. I'm going to start doing some of these because you guys ask for more content, and the editing when I do my more elaborate stuff is obviously time consuming. So these are going to be a little rougher, just telling some stories, but I'm not making them up and I'm giving you facts. This particular one, got to find the source material. Al Profit, American Dope, I'm out.